region or have another print disability which makes reading, holding a book, or turning a page difficult or impossible. The content is copyrighted by the respective publishers. For more information, please visit us on the web at nfradioreading.org.
Hello, this is Corrine, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from the May 19th, 2026 issue of the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Thank you for joining us today. The highlights under business and finance are: a jury rejected Elon Musk's claims against OpenAI, finding that he brought his lawsuit against the company and chief executive Sam Altman after the statute of limitations expired. NextEra Energy agreed to buy Dominion Energy in a roughly $67 billion deal that would create an East Coast heavyweight serving Florida, the Carolinas, and Virginia. Google and Blackstone plan to create an AI cloud company that would be launched with $5 billion in capital, with the goal of rivaling the likes of CoreWeave. Major U.S. stock indexes ended mixed, with the S&P 500 losing less than 0.1%, the NASDAQ shedding 0.5%, and the Dow rising 0.3%. The Justice Department said it would drop its criminal fraud case against Indian billionaire Gautam Adani. Darsana Capital Partners stands to make more than $10 billion on its investment in SpaceX when Musk's rocket maker goes public. Anglo American agreed to sell steelmaking coal assets in Australia for up to $3.875 billion in cash, moving to simplify its portfolio ahead of a merger with Teck Resources. Christie's auctioned a Pollock painting for $181 million and a Brancusi sculpture for $108 million, underscoring confidence in the art market. AstraZeneca received U.S. approval for a new hypertension treatment, a drug it expects to generate multi-billion dollar annual sales at its peak. Ford outlined a broad product and technology strategy for Europe and signed a battery energy storage agreement in North America. ThyssenKrupp will close a plant in Terre Haute, Indiana. Now for the key articles under the Worldwide section. The Trump administration created an extraordinary settlement fund with nearly $1.8 billion to compensate people who claim the federal government weaponized the legal system against them. The Treasury's top lawyer resigned as the settlement fund was announced. Three men were killed in a shooting at the Islamic Center of San Diego, and two teenage suspects were found dead in what is being investigated as a hate crime. Prosecutors in Minnesota charged an ICE agent with assault in the shooting of a Venezuelan immigrant during its surge in Minneapolis. A deal was reached to end the three-day strike by Long Island Railroad workers in the New York area. A New York judge ruled prosecutors can use a notebook and gun found in Luigi Maggioni's backpack as evidence in his trial for a CEO's murder. The New York Times and reporter Julian E. Barnes filed a second lawsuit against the Pentagon, escalating their fight over rules restricting press access to military officials and the Defense Department's main building. Two senators introduced bipartisan legislation that would ban digital gambling advertisements targeting people under the age of 18. Three people were killed in a shooting at a mosque in San Diego, and police said gunfire was heard nearby. Trump said he would hold off on a planned U.S. attack on Iran at the request of Persian Gulf leaders to make room for negotiations with Tehran. Anthropic began letting some users of its AI model, Mythos, share cybersecurity data, modifying an earlier stance. Starting in June, passengers catching morning flights out of Boston Logan International Airport will be able to go through a TSA screening outpost in Framingham, Massachusetts, rather than in a terminal. The death toll in the latest round of fighting between Israel and Iran-backed Hezbollah in Lebanon surpassed 3,000. Lebanon's health ministry said. Died Mark Furman, 74, figure in O.J. Simpson trial. The picture on today's front page shows a man masking up, standing inside what appears to be a tent, as another younger man is pointing what appears to be a laser at him. And that caption reads, "Cautious." A border health officer at the Busanga crossing between Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo checks a traveler's temperature on Monday. An American missionary contracted Ebola while working in Congo, where the outbreak began. And the headline reads, "Alarm grows over Ebola after outbreak in Congo." The article from World Watch, Congo, American tests positive for Ebola. An American contracted Ebola while working in the Democratic Republic of Congo, U.S. health authorities said. The person developed symptoms over the weekend and tested positive late Sunday, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said Monday. An outbreak of the potentially deadly virus began in Congo and has spread to neighboring Uganda. Surge, a Christian organization, said its missionary, Dr. Peter Stafford, was exposed to the virus while treating patients at a hospital in northeastern Congo. Congo will open 3 Ebola treatment centers in the eastern Ituri province to deal with the outbreak. And that was from Alyssa Lukpat. And that was by Alyssa Lukpat. Other articles from the front page follow. Jury rejects Musk's suit against OpenAI. Mogul found to have filed case too late. Path clear for chatbot maker to launch IPO. By Georgia Wells and Angel Al Jung. Oakland, California. A jury unanimously rejected Elon Musk's claims against OpenAI, finding that he brought his lawsuit against the company and chief executive Sam Altman after the statute of limitations expired. In deliberations that lasted less than 2 hours, the 9-person panel found against Musk on technical grounds. He had alleged in testimony that the startup behind the world's most popular chatbot stole a charity when it converted into a for-profit company. U.S. District Judge Yovan Gonzalez-Rogers, who presided over the case, accepted the verdict and dismissed the claims. Musk's attorney said in court that his side will reserve its right to appeal. Next, Era to Buy Dominion for $67 billion by Jennifer Hiller and Ben Dummett. NextEra Energy agreed to buy Dominion Energy in a roughly $67 billion deal that would create the largest U.S. electricity producer and represent one of the biggest tie-ups of the year. The company said Monday that they plan to combine in a mostly stock deal. NextEra is offering the equivalent of around $76 a share to Dominion shareholders, based on Friday's closing stock prices. In addition, they will receive a one-time cash payment of $360 million once the deal closes, the company said. Dominion Energy shares surged 9.4% to $67.56 on Monday, while New Era dropped 4.6% to $89.04. In the deal, Next Era is offering 0.8138 of its shares for each Dominion share. The tie-up would combine two of the largest U.S. utilities into an East Coast energy titan with 10 million customer accounts in Florida, the Carolinas, and Virginia. It is expected to close within the next 18 months and would require approval from a handful of state and federal regulators. DOJ fund opened path for Trump allies to get $1.8 billion by C. Ryan Barber, Richard Rubin, and Sadie Gurman, Washington. The Trump administration created an extraordinary settlement fund with nearly $1.8 billion to compensate people who claim that the federal government weaponized the legal system against them. A move that could direct federal money to President Trump's allies with minimal oversight. The Justice Department announced the fund Monday, along with Trump's decision to withdraw a lawsuit seeking billions of dollars from the Internal Revenue Service for disclosure of his tax returns. Instead of attempting legal arguments against Trump, the government lawyers who work for him settled the case and opened a path for aggrieved people to get money from the U.S. without going into federal court. Trump is also dropping two other claims against the government that he runs, one that sought damages for the Federal Bureau of Investigation's 2022 search of his Mar-a-Lago estate, and another about the investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 election, which loomed over much of his first term. The president, along with his namesake company and elder sons, Donald Trump Jr. and Eric Trump, will receive a formal apology, but no monetary payment or damages as part of the settlement, the Justice Department said. Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche will appoint a 5-person commission to administer the fund, which will wrap up just before the end of Trump's term and have the power to pay people who submit claims. Trump will be able to fire commission members. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. How Nicki Minaj became the president's number one fan. Rap superstar is throwing her weight behind the White House after being courted by Trump's 29-year-old celebrity whisperer. By Eric Schwartzel, Josh Dossi, and Maggie Severance. Shortly before the 2024 election that would move him back into the White House, Donald Trump took a phone call on his plane from a secret supporter. Nicki Minaj was on the line, and she wanted Trump to know she was supporting his reelection, according to people familiar with the matter. Trump's campaign managers, sensing an opportunity to score an endorsement from the rap world's most popular female star, asked Minaj to take her support public. But Minaj and her management team said she needed to stay behind the scenes because taking a political stance posed a risk to her brand and businesses, some of these people said. Not anymore. Today, the 43-year-old, best known for chart toppers like Starships, for leading an online army of mega fans known as Barbs, and for bringing a theatrical streak to contemporary hip-hop, has embraced a new status atop MAGA's A-list. She has visited Trump in the Oval Office, spoken in support of administration priorities at the United Nations, and encouraged her tens of millions of social media followers to lobby their legislators on the White House's behalf. She has gabbed on stage with conservative influencers. She also put her own money behind Trump accounts for children, filmed a TikTok meme video with Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, and recorded a podcast with conservative commentator Katie Miller. All of the work, she told Miller, has become a second job she felt called to do. Speaking at a Black History event in February, Trump made clear the phantom went both ways when he started talking about Minaj's long manicured nails. I said, Nicki, are they real? But she didn't want to get into that. But she was so beautiful and so great, and she gets it, more importantly, he said. What appears on the surface to be an unlikely relationship between the president and a star who once opposed some of his policies, is in fact an outgrowth of a calculated effort to lure cultural heavyweights away from the Democratic Party. The White House hopes Minaj's megaphone will help reverse a decline in support among Black voters who helped return Trump to office. The slippage now threatens to hurt Republicans in the midterms. Imperfect chips power Apple products, profits, by Ralph Winkler and Yang Yi. Apple, long revered for its premium-priced products, has managed to develop a booming business selling cheaper devices when most gadget makers are being hammered by rising cost. One of its secrets, using chips with slight defects that might otherwise be thrown out. The strategy is apparent in the technical minutiae of the newly released $599 MacBook Neo, which early data suggests is a hit with customers. The chip powering the Neo is Apple's A18 Pro, the same chip first used inside the iPhone 16 Pro 2 years ago, but with one key difference. The Neo version of the chip has a 5-core graphics processor, one less than the version inside the 2024 iPhones, indicating that Apple was able to save some of the A18 Pro chips with a defective core for future use. Defective cores can be disabled, leaving a chip that still functions perfectly well to power different, often cheaper devices in this line, an entry-level laptop instead of a top-of-the-line iPhone. It is the latest example of Apple deploying a decades-old chip industry strategy to squeeze profits from lesser-performing processors by selling them like eggs, gas, diamonds, or hotel rooms, segmented by good, better, and best. Parents fume over kids getting extra time on test. Unlimited breaks for bowel problems. Families get creative in pursuit of an edge. By Tara Weiss. Adarsh Vijay Mudgal thought his children had every advantage for college admissions. A top high school in Long Island that offered plenty of AP courses, test prep tutors, and a private advisor to guide them on applications. Then his daughter told him at least 60 peers received extra time to finish the ACT during their junior year at Jericho High School. Mudgal said he doubts they all had legitimate reasons for the special accommodation. More likely, they had parents who found a loophole. "It's cheating," said Mudgal, 50, whose daughter is now at the University of Virginia. "It puts our kids at a disadvantage." Test time has emerged as a fierce battleground among parents of high schoolers. Students with diagnosed disabilities or medical issues for years have been given longer to finish college entrance exams. But the ranks of the extra timers have surged, with a concentration in wealthy areas, and many parents are crying foul. They're training their anger on families who are going to extremes for an edge, from spending $10,000 for a diagnosis from a neuropsychologist to finding a gastroenterologist to support request for unlimited bathroom breaks. Another tactic, several parents said, seek out teachers who give their kid extra leeway with test time in class and have them write letters attesting to the student's anxiety or other reason for special treatment. Mudgal, a dermatologist, devoted 2 episodes of his podcast, typically about skin care, fitness, and inspirational people, to the topic. "We're grooming a generation that is just not going to be capable of performing under pressure, and that's a scary thought," he said on an April episode titled "Special Accommodation or Cheating." Leaving the front page, Trump says he is calling off Iran attack. By Vera Bergengruen, Alexander Ward, and Somerset. Washington. President Trump said he would hold off on a planned U.S. attack on Iran at the request of Gulf leaders to make room for negotiations with Tehran over a prospective deal to end the war. In a social media post on Monday, Trump said he had directed Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth and other U.S. military officials not to proceed with the attack, which he said was scheduled to take place on Tuesday. but he warned that he had further instructed them to be prepared to go forward with a full, large-scale assault of Iran on a moment's notice in the event that an acceptable deal is not reached. The president said the leaders of Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates asked him to hold off on the attack because serious negotiations are now taking place. A day earlier, he warned that the clock is ticking and that if Iran didn't move on peace negotiations, there won't be anything left of them. Judge allows evidence tied to Mangione by Corinne Rami. A New York judge ruled on Monday that prosecutors can use a notebook and gun found in Luigi Mangione's backpack as evidence in his coming trial for the murder of UnitedHealthcare chief executive Brian Thompson, but barred other items seized when he was arrested. Judge Gregory Caro in Manhattan State Court wrote that the initial search of the backpack at a McDonald's in Pennsylvania didn't meet the legal requirements for conducting a search without a warrant. The evidence found during the search of the backpack at the McDonald's must be suppressed, including the magazine, cell phone, passport, wallet, and computer chip, he wrote. Evidence recovered from a later search at a police station was handled properly, the judge said. The cataloging and photographing of the notebook was a valid part of the inventory search, he wrote. The gun, which was in a separate backpack compartment, was discovered at the station. AstraZeneca drug gets nod. UK pharmaceutical company gets the green light to launch Baxfendi in the US. By Adria Kaladayed. AstraZeneca said it received U.S. approval for a new hypertension treatment, getting the green light to launch a drug the UK pharmaceutical company expects to generate multi-billion dollar annual sales at its peak. The drug, known until now as Baxdrostat, will be marketed under the brand name Baxfendi, the company said Monday. The approval expands AstraZeneca's cardiovascular, renal, and metabolism portfolio shortly after diabetes drug Farxiga, its biggest product in that therapeutic area and the best-selling medicine in the company's history, went off patent in the U.S. AstraZeneca said Baxfendi treats hypertension in a new way by targeting aldosterone, a hormone that raises blood pressure. Ford details Europe growth plan by Connor Hart. Ford Motor outlined a broad product and technology strategy for Europe that aims to renew its commitment to the region. Separately, the automaker on Monday signed a large-scale battery energy storage agreement in North America. Both moves reflect Ford's push to expand beyond traditional vehicle manufacturing into software, services, and energy infrastructure. Ford said it plans to introduce a new heavy-duty pickup truck in Europe, as well as an all-electric van designed for fleets operating in dense urban areas. The company is aiming to launch 5 new passenger vehicles across the region by the end of 2029, including a new Bronco family model, a small electric sport utility vehicle, and 2 crossover vehicles. Under its new European strategy, Ford also will reposition its Ford Pro arm from a vehicle manufacturer into a productivity partner, leveraging software and services to maximize returns, it said. The shift supports the company's target to generate 25% of the unit's global earnings before interest and taxes from software and services annually, it said. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. From the editorial page, the proxy advisors strike back. ISS and Glass Lewis join New York to stop an Exxon move to Texas. Proxy advisors Glass Lewis and Institutional Shareholder Services are back in their bad old ways of bullying companies. This month, the duopoly joined New York City Comptroller Mark Levine's campaign to stop ExxonMobil from vamoosing to Texas. Exxon investors will vote on the company's plan to move its legal home to Texas from New Jersey at its annual shareholder meeting on May 27th. In announcing the move, Exxon noted that Texas has established specialized business courts designed to resolve complex disputes efficiently and that apply clear statute-based standards. Texas also lets companies domiciled in the state require that investors hold at least $1 million in market value or 3% of voting shares for 6 months to submit shareholder proposals. Companies can also require shareholders to own at least 3% of shares to bring lawsuits for breaches of fiduciary duty and self-dealing. Activists with little stake in companies have abused the shareholder proxy process to drive their environmental, social, and governance, ESG, political agenda. This includes resolutions requiring carbon dioxide emission cuts and workforce diversity audits. Plaintiff firms and government pension funds are using shareholder lawsuits to shake down companies. It's often less expensive for companies to settle lawsuits than defend against them. One reason is courts in states like Delaware and New Jersey have become unpredictable. Recall how a Delaware judge in 2024 invalidated Tesla CEO Elon Musk's pay package, which shareholders had twice approved, on the dubious rationale that it violated the state's fairness standard. All of this explains why Exxon is joining a parade of companies, including Tesla, SpaceX, Coinbase, and Dillard's, that have moved their legal homes to Texas. Politicians like Mr. Levine, who oversees New York City's worker pension funds, worry they'll have a harder time raiding companies based in Texas. Glass Lewis and ISS, which control 90% of the proxy advisory market, also fear their power over companies will wane if activists face a higher burden to bring ESG resolutions. The duopoly offers consulting services to businesses on how to win shareholder votes, so the firms profit from more ESG proposals. Exxon hasn't sought to amend its bylaws to limit shareholder resolutions, but it hasn't ruled out the option. Mr. Levine is urging shareholders to vote against its move because he says it sets the stage for the potential erosion of shareholder rights under Texas state law. Huh? Limiting access to the proxy ballot for political activists who don't have a stake in a company's long-term success is in the interest of shareholders. Reducing frivolous litigation and payouts to plaintiff attorneys would also benefit shareholders who ultimately pay a company's legal bills. ISS echoed Mr. Levine's arguments this week in recommending a vote against the move. The company has demonstrated a degree of hostility to shareholders' exercise of certain of these key accountability mechanisms in recent years, ISS wrote. It's true, Exxon has opposed ESG resolutions, but by describing them euphemistically as accountability mechanisms, ISS is showing its left hand. ISS also complained that Exxon's amended bylaws would provide an exclusive forum provision to litigate shareholder complaints in federal court in Southern Texas or the state's special business courts. Glass Lewis said in its benchmark advisory policy that such forum selection clauses are not in shareholders' best interest. But as Exxon replies, a substantial portion of the S&P 500, including the majority of Delaware incorporated insurers, maintain exclusive forum provisions designating a single court for internal affairs litigation. The proxy advisors don't want Texas courts to be the sole arbiters of shareholder lawsuits, because the state's judges may be less likely to indulge strained liability theories, such as those in the lawsuit against Mr. Musk's compensation. Glass Lewis and ISS have been trying to rehabilitate their political image amid stepped-up scrutiny from the Securities and Exchange Commission, state attorneys general, and members of Congress. But their opposition to Exxon's move underscores their unholy alliance with progressive activists, government pension funds, and plaintiff attorneys. Breaking the proxy advisor's power would require legislation which needs Democratic support. But don't be surprised if more companies seek to escape their clutches by moving to Texas. Trump bugs out on Poland. The Pentagon cancels a brigade deployment to NATO's Eastern Front. Americans have their heads on swivels from the summit in Beijing to President Trump's renewed warnings to Iran, and thus it's all the more important to keep track of the administration's stealth retreat from Europe unfolding in the background. The administration in recent days abruptly canceled a planned brigade deployment to Poland. Members of Congress say they and Poland were blindsided by the decision, and that equipment for the deployment was already on the way when the Pentagon pulled the plug. A Pentagon spokesman obfuscated the choice to the press in the language of a comprehensive, multi-layered process. Abrupt exits from Europe are becoming a Trump administration habit. The Pentagon last year yanked a rotational brigade from Romania, and this spring it said the U.S. will remove 5,000 troops from Germany out of irritation with how Berlin had handled the Iran war. Both decisions earned the administration's public rebukes from its GOP allies in Congress. Russia has invaded Ukraine. Nebraska Republican Don Bacon said to Army officials on Capitol Hill late last week, "Have they given us any concessions to withdraw two armor brigades out of Europe as they're invading Ukraine? What concessions have they given us as we withdraw forces? You know the answer. No doubt Mr. Trump wants to punish Europe for its ambivalent and at times unhelpful response to the Iran war. But Poland? The Trump's team's refrain about model allies who share the burdens of defense is meaningless if Poland doesn't qualify. Warsaw holds the gold medal for North Atlantic Treaty Organization defense spending, 4.3% of its economy, according to NATO's count. President Trump was asked last year if he'd take Trumps out of Poland. If anything, he said, we'll put more there if they want. The cancellation is also inept politics. The president has proposed a $1.5 trillion defense budget, but getting it passed will require a legislative Hail Mary of another GOP budget reconciliation bill. So why is the president provoking a brawl with the GOP defense hawks who will write those bills? The answer? Some in the Trump administration want to capitalize on the president's frustrations with NATO to stage a larger retreat from Europe, which they see as a peripheral security interest to the U.S. They should have the candor to admit this openly to Europe, Congress, and the American public, rather than to do it in stealthy dribs and drabs. But Vladimir Putin is still attempting to grind his way across Ukraine, and though wounded, he also keeps throwing more men and equipment into his conquest. Meanwhile, the U.S. is dealing with a dug-in Iranian regime and whispering nice tiger to Beijing. It's no time to look weak and halting in Europe. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. From the opinion pages, Trump's primary campaign against Massie. Tuesday is Judgment Day in Kentucky. The Republican primary in the state's 4th congressional district is a contest between 7-term incumbent and MIT graduate Representative Thomas Massie and challenger Ed Gallrain, a farmer and former U.S. Navy SEAL who earned 4 Bronze Stars. Everyone knows this fight is between Donald Trump and Mr. Massie, the president's most outspoken Republican critic in the House. The two men have traded barbs for years, and as it comes down the wire, Mr. Trump hasn't let up. On Monday, the president posted on Truth Social, "The worst congressman in the long and storied history of the Republican Party is Thomas Massie. He is an obstructionist and a fool. Vote him out of office tomorrow, Tuesday. It will be a great day for America. President DJT." That is one of Mr. Trump's milder critiques. The president's intervention is also why this congressional race has been getting so much attention outside Kentucky. If Mr. Massie prevails, the victory will be treated as a sign of Mr. Trump's waning influence over his own party. But if Mr. Massey is defeated, it will be taken as a warning to all Republicans that you mess with the president at your own peril. All the attention has made this battle the most expensive House primary in U.S. history. Some $32.6 million has been spent on ads. For comparison, Ad Impact noted, more has been spent in this primary than in several major 2024 House general elections. So what's behind the great dislike that Messrs. Massey and Trump have for each other? Some of it, doubtless, is personality, and some of it due to differing policy priorities. The two men start from sharply different worldviews. Mr. Trump, a deal-making real estate developer from New York City, isn't driven by philosophical principles. Instead, he relies on what he says are common sense solutions to deal with problems at hand. He touts his approach often, as he did when he went to Beijing to meet Xi Jinping. Mr. Massey, a proud libertarian, believes in fighting most anything that might make government bigger. Republicans tend to view libertarians as letting abstractions such as free trade get in the way of practical solutions such as tariffs. A libertarian Republican sometimes has to go along with a bill he doesn't like if he wants to be more than a gadfly in Congress. But it's worth exploring where exactly a libertarian draws the line between reasonable compromise and abandonment of principle. Mr. Massey's record in Congress tells us he isn't really interested in compromise. He was one of the only two Republican congressmen who voted against the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which last July crammed in all the president's domestic tax and spending priorities. But unlike the Democrats, who uniformly oppose it mostly because of its spending cuts, Mr. Massey did so because he saw it as a betrayal of the American taxpayer, calling the legislation a debt bomb ticking. Mr. Massey has also irritated the president by raising his ties to Jeffrey Epstein, the convicted sex offender who committed suicide in 2019 while in jail awaiting trial on charges of sex trafficking. Mr. Massey led the successful drive to release the federal government's files on Epstein, a slap against Mr. Trump. But there's another incendiary aspect, especially timely. Like many libertarians, Mr. Massey opposes most U.S. military intervention overseas, including America's war with Iran. He has also been highly critical of the Israeli lobby and accuses pro-Israel donors of turning his primary race into a referendum on whether Israel gets to dictate U.S. foreign policy by bullying members of Congress. Polls have shown the race is very close. Early on, Mr. Massey seemed to have the edge, but the New York Times reports that two new polls from Gray House and SoCal Strategies show Mr. Gallrain up by 7 points. If that holds, Mr. Massey could be the president's second scalp in less than a week. On Saturday in Louisiana, Senator Bill Cassidy came in third in a three-way GOP primary. President Trump opposed him because he was one of seven Republican senators who voted to convict him in his 2021 impeachment trial. Will Mr. Massey go the same way? Trump, Taiwan, and the Thucydides Trap. A U.S.-China conflict would be perilous for both nations, and the ultimate outcome isn't inevitable. By Gerard Baker. Did President Trump just sell Taiwan to China in exchange for some high-level flattery and an agreement to buy Boeing jets and soybeans? To his critics and anxious China watchers, Mr. Trump is like the biblical Esau, son of Isaac and older brother of Jacob, who sold his birthright to his sibling for an evening meal. Listening to the president's remarks after the China summit, you can be forgiven for fearing that America is about to be fed a mess of pottage while the Chinese Communist Party feasts on Taiwan chips and another cup of victory in its march to global hegemon. Not so fast. Mr. Trump has a habit of seeming to swoon in the face of blandishments. The joke in diplomatic circles is that on recent visits to the U.S., King Charles III was received so warmly that Mr. Trump would have readily agreed to return a couple of colonies if the king had asked. Don't laugh, Republicans. Giving Massachusetts and Connecticut back to the motherland could ensure a permanent GOP majority in both houses of Congress. But words in Mr. Trump's mouth are endlessly malleable, soon to be replaced by different ones. He might have sounded accommodating in the afterglow of his trip, but U.S. officials say nothing was surrendered in the summit itself. The Chinese official readout, with its warning about conflicts over Taiwan, and the omission from the U.S. side of any mention of the island, were strong indications of no change in American policy. That won't stop everyone from watching nervously as Mr. Trump ponders new arms sales to Taiwan. But even if Republican members of Congress continue their self-annihilation as an independent branch of government, the law, the Taiwan Relations Act, which requires such sales, may provide a convenient substitute for their spine. Taiwan's future looms larger in geostrategy as China's rise threatens not only its freedom, but also the fate of American allies in Asia and the wider framework of American security. Two large uncertainties have always attended the question. The first is whether our strategic ambiguity is really ambiguous at all. Would Americans tolerate a war with a nuclear superpower over a territory we don't even recognize as an independent country? The seeming reluctance of Americans to tolerate the cost of war with Iran, higher gasoline prices, and a looming shortage of fertilizer suggests the answer is no. But the other uncertainty has been whether China will take the risk of armed conflict over Taiwan. Beijing is watching the war in Iran closely too, and while it may be happy to see the U.S. ensnaring itself in another Middle Eastern man trap, it will be focused on another lesson, the paradox of modern asymmetrical warfare. Russia in Ukraine, the U.S. in Iraq, Afghanistan, and now Iran. It is a record of vastly superior militaries struggling against minnows. The disruption to trade in the Gulf and its global effects are a reminder of the economic calamity that would likely erupt from war in the Taiwan Strait. China recovered Hong Kong and Macau in the past 30 years without firing a shot, and it crushed them both under its repressive autocracy. Xi Jinping may be counting on the same dynamic with Taiwan, but there is no colonial power to hand the island over without a fight, and China's ability to prevail by force is predicated on its confidence that it is the ascendant power in the world. Mr. Xi's reference to Thucydides' trap in his public remarks last week was revealing of that self-belief. In the retelling of the ancient historian's chronicle of the 5th century BC Peloponnesian War, China is Athens and America Sparta. The U.S. is the incumbent power challenged by a rising hegemon that threatens destabilizing competition and ultimately conflict. But the lessons of Thucydides don't point to inevitable rise or decline. The war he described began when the rising power, Athens, emboldened by the conversion of its Delian League allies into an empire, broke an uneasy Cold War between the two city-states by allying with a sworn enemy of Sparta. It ended with victory for the Spartans, the incumbent power, and the complete capitulation of Athens, the rising one, after a series of catastrophic mistakes, most notably a military adventure across the distant sea in Sicily in a failed attempt to expand its colonial footprint. The lessons you draw vary according to your priors. Perhaps America is Athens, a deliberative democracy captured by mob rule and demagoguery, imperviously turning its allies into restive subjects, pursuing reckless engagements far from home, and finally buckling under from the frailty of its own excesses. Perhaps China is Athens, the rising power riding roughshod over allies and foes alike, misinterpreting its heady ascent for inevitable hegemony, and winding up being humiliated by the steady incumbent power. The only reliable lesson is that there is no inevitability in great power rivalry. Wise leadership, prudent judgment, strategic patience, the maintenance of alliances, domestic cohesion, promotion of economic dynamism, these are all choices that trump destiny in the pursuit of national greatness. We have only to make the right ones. The Pepper and Salt cartoon today shows two men on the golf course lugging their bags. And the conversation is, I never thought my big existential crisis would be microplastics. You've been listening to a reading of articles and features from the May 19th, 2026 issue of the Wall Street Journal. We read from the Wall Street Journal every Monday through Thursday at 11 p.m. Your reader has been Corrine. Thank you for listening, and have a wonderful day or evening.